In her latest book, Abundant Ever After: Tools for Creating a Life of Prosperity and Ease, podcast host, transformational coach, and meditation teacher Kathy Heller warns against an excessive material wealth and a poverty of the soul. Heller, who is best known for her Everything is Energy podcast, formerly called the Kathy Heller Podcast, and her first book, Don't Keep Your Day Job: How to Turn Your Passion into Your Career, uses first-hand accounts, ancient Jewish wisdom, helpful exercises, and new twists on maladaptive thought patterns to introduce readers to a world that is inherently good and surprisingly abundant. Whether through her podcast, which has nearly 50 million downloads, mindfulness retreats and classes, or in her books, Heller often begins by establishing two truths. First, in order to access abundance in life, whether related to health, relationships, or career, one must know how to truly receive. Receiving, writes Heller in Abundant Ever After, is inherent and resistance is learned. Heller also emphasizes that thoughts are energy and tangible vibrations, and as such, thoughts create reality. Years earlier, while working an unfulfilling job in real estate, Heller began digging deep into her own thoughts and beliefs about scarcity and abundance. She left real estate to pursue a music career, but it was her podcast, and its first episode, which she recorded secretly inside her closet as her young children were home, that changed everything. Her success is the result of decades of hard work and even harder introspection, including time spent in Israel, learning with her mentor, Rabbi David Aaron. In the book, Heller gives her readers loving support, but assures them that they are not going to make it big by Friday. She encourages readers to be a C student with something to edit. I want you to be willing to be mediocre, willing to let go of the shame. You're not going to get it all right away. None of us do. If you allow yourself to be a C student and you let that be enough, you're going to go so far. Heller also admits that perfectionism, which keeps so many from pursuing their highest dreams, is just a trauma response. In a Zoom interview, I asked Heller, who spent years living in Los Angeles and currently resides in Florida, where she grew up, about her journey from an unhappy real estate agent to writing commercial jingles for McDonald's and eventually creating and hosting one of the most inspiring podcasts today. Heller's refreshing and reader-friendly book is a testament to one of her biggest life philosophies, namely, that the secret to abundance is to not overestimate how much of it we need to feel good. The following has been edited for clarity and length. Jewish Journal. I began reading your book before this current war between the United States and Israel against Iran, and at the time, I found it easier to access a mindset of abundance. Since then, it has been much harder, especially with news of Israel under Iranian missile fire. In this era of ceaselessly disturbing news, how do you personally access a sense of abundance as a Jewish spiritual guide? Kathy Heller. First, I am a human being, a mother, and someone who loves Israel deeply, and who is so connected to Am Israel and our entire people across all different parts of the world, so I feel it when I wake up in the morning. The same intensity, the same dark cloud. However, one of the things that is most repeated in the Torah is, do not be afraid. And even though we are living in this particularly turbulent time, God gave us a tool belt and a code to exist in reality. So, the path has been prepared. We were given exactly what we would need for this moment, and while it's true that there are so many very intense things that would evoke fear in a person, there are so many miracles happening multiple times a day. For every story I hear of an Iranian cluster bomb, I think about all of the ones that were intercepted or didn't go off. JJ, would you extend this message to the wider Jewish community as a tool for dealing with violence abroad and at home against Jews? CH, here's what I would say, and I'm saying this very gently and stepping slowly into these words because I also can appreciate the intensity of the grief and the pain, and all the feelings that are real for people at this time. Everything in this world is atomic. Everything is energy. Everything. So, what we see in the three-dimensional space is only 1% of reality, because reality is 99% energy. The heart is 60 times more powerful than the mind. And when you live in your heart, when you live from purpose, when you live with love, when you live with emunah, faith, you are a coherent, energetic force. And there is a difference between power and force. When we are actually in our power, we don't even need force. The real forces in this world are not using force, because they're tapped into the ultimate power, which is Hashem. I don't lose sight of that. I'm not surprised that we, Jews, punch above our weight where we are literally 15 million people out of 8 billion, because we have coherence, connection and intention. If intention creates a fact, our intention is tikkun, repair. No logic could get you to the place where you are seeing what is happening right now, with this little nation, Israel. It is again David and Goliath, and when David meets Goliath, he says, "You might be physically bigger than me. But I come with the creator of the universe behind me. And that is not something that you are a match for." Honestly, I'm not saying it just because it sounds like a beautiful fairy tale. This is how I see the world. JJ, how did the events of October 7, 2023 and their aftermath test the concepts of abundance and flow with reality that you attempted to master? CH, I remember that I was at my Israeli friend's sukkah, and her phone went off. We started watching Israeli TV. It was 9 p.m. or so in LA, and we knew this would be the worst thing that we'd ever seen because we were even watching footage of Israeli victims ring doorbells on TV. My skin is reacting and crawling as I describe this. We were all living in this anguish together, and for the next few weeks, I wasn't eating or sleeping. Just constantly checking in on family and friends in Israel. Constantly feeling as though the bottom was dropped from underneath the world, and I didn't feel there was anything that I could rest upon. And then, I received a call from a man I'm close friends with, whose son needed to enter Gaza with the army. They were calling people up so quickly that they didn't have enough gear. And he asked me if I would send a very large amount of money for more gear. The need was immediate. I remember being so grateful that there was one way in which GD wanted me to feel useful. There are things that are happening on the spiritual chessboard, today, that have a huge impact. The Talmud says that the world is held up by 36 righteous people, the secret Tzaddikim. But they could be regular people. It could be the guy who puts your produce away. And we don't know. Maybe the real battle sometimes is between two brothers who haven't spoken, that one would offer forgiveness to the other. We actually don't know what is measured in the heavenly realm and who is needed where, and I woke up to that. It's so easy for us to be keyboard warriors and to weigh in on geopolitics. But the truth of the matter is that it's about creating peace within our own home, within our own being. And I realized that my only way forward was to be useful. I also realized that, for me, the answer to anti-Semitism is pro-Semitism. At that point, I was invited to so many dinners with influencers, people who have a following online, a podcast, an audience. And people would sit there and talk about anti-Semitism the entire night. And finally, I would raise my hand and say, "Your greatest possible way of helping the situation is shining Yiddishkeit, Jewish sensibility, shining Judaism in the world, because what is the world hungry for? Consciousness. And that is what Jews came into this world to bring." JJ, you have led many mindfulness retreats and seminars and are raising 3 daughters. What challenges are unique to Gen Z and those born in the smartphone era in terms of being present in the moment? CH, for Gen Z, it's harder for them because when you have stimulation, constant scrolling and swiping, you're looking for the dopamine hit of the next piece of content. But what is much more fascinating is that the world outside of us is the world within us. And every single one of us is actually a spark of the divine. So, the real tool is to slow down enough to hear the way God is speaking to us all day long. God is on the phone all day. JJ, have we reached a point of no return with regard to a generation of phone and device addicts? CH, no, I think we can get back. We have gotten so far to the point that now, my 14-year-old daughter goes to sleepaway camp, and she can't wait for them to take her phone away. I just interviewed social psychologist Jonathan Haidt, who wrote the book, The Anxious Generation, and I had him on my podcast recently. I asked him, what's the answer to this problem? He said the answer is the Sabbath. He said that as a secular Jew, he regretted deeply that he didn't keep the Sabbath, especially when his kids were young, so they could really be together. And that is not something we have to be Jewish or not to practice. We can all unplug from everything that's out there. JJ, your daughter's story about attending sleepaway camp is fascinating. Why does she look forward to surrendering her phone? Ch. She loves it because she says, Mom, it makes me so happy that everybody isn't distracted and looking down at their phone. We're actually connecting and it feels like so much more connection and peace. Without the phone, she doesn't feel the dopamine addiction. You know, when you're on your phone all day long, you start to get worn down. JJ, you have written that girls and women tend to have more thought patterns that drive away beliefs in abundance, goodness and self-worth. Why is that? Ch. There's a difference between strategy and career advice and wealth consciousness. A mental block about not having money is not actually about money. It's about how resistant you are to power. Because the idea behind having money is to steward money, to make decisions about money, to be decisive. Men don't ask too many others about decisions, they just make the decision. Money is something that we circulate. The word currency comes from current, so that money is constantly circular. We don't desire money for oneself alone, we desire it to be part of the collective. It goes through us as a lightning rod into the collective. Everyone gets to experience more expansion. It's like the Maharal says, one candle offers an unlimited amount of light. The abundance you create becomes abundance for everyone immediately, even before you steward it. But many women are uncomfortable, wondering, who am I to be visible? If I have money, people will judge me. We made these false agreements with ourselves that we can't be a values-driven person and have money. But why are those mutually exclusive? King David had so much wealth and was also deeply committed to God. I think a lot of women defer their sense of power. As opposed to feeling decisive, they feel that they can't back themselves in their decisions and feel comfortable stewarding and making decisions about investments. Women believe we are responsible for how other people feel. So in work, we don't set a high price for something because we don't want to upset people. Men will tell you the price of the deal, and if you say no, they're not offended and they don't feel responsible for your emotions. We women conflate all of that, and so it makes it harder to leave. It makes it harder to do business because there's a lot of resistance to just being decisive, being autonomous, backing ourselves and not feeling guilty. We're resistant to being fully in our power. JJ. Several weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal published a story titled, The New Get Rich Quick Idea. Play Disco on Repeat, that described the experiences of those who have enjoyed unexpected financial fortunes after playing the 1979 hit, Ring My Bell, repeatedly. Are there specific energies and sensory experiences? Ch. I'm not surprised at all, because energy creates matter. In my book, I deliberately chose the subtitle, Tools for Prosperity and Ease. And the reason I use the word, ease, is because we are so married to the idea that things have to be hard, that we don't understand the way God actually created the world. If you look out at nature, there's no tree that feels urgent. There's nothing rushing, because it knows it's being provided for. There's already an ecosystem. The universe, the way God created it, is not net neutral or net negative. It's net positive. It's the manna from heaven. It always comes. This past Jewish calendar month, Nisan, was about a breakthrough. When we understand that God's not withholding anything from us, we know that it's our perception that is still causing the resistance. I wake up every single day and ask, open my eyes, God, that I might perceive as wide as you want to give. Open my eyes that I may perceive all of the miracles that are already hidden in plain sight that I was not perceiving from a lower consciousness. Open my eyes that I could perceive it.